We're holding on Hey Amud Beis, about the middle of the Amud, the line begins kind of tzarech. So we've been talking about different things where when different chachamim would read different psukim, it would make them cry over the implications of it. So now we have, on the other hand, and we also had the last thing was, we said that Hashem looks after everything in the world, even the casual conversation between a husband and wife where it's inappropriate. So now we're going to talk about something where Hashem himself, kavyachol, reacts to something going on in the world. The pasuk says in Yirmiyah, the im lois tishma'ua, the Navi is warning the Jewish people, if you don't listen to what I have to say in Hashem's name and do tshuva, v'mistodim tivka nafshi, then my soul, meaning I myself, will cry in secret places mipnei geva, because of geva, which geva is meloshin geva, meloshin the pride, the greatness. So what does that mean? So it means, so the tivka nafshi, in other words, we're saying, it's not just the Navi is saying I'm going to cry, but Hashem himself is saying, kav yachol, that he's going to cry. So omer shmo ba'inya v'shmei didav, mokam yesh loyla, kadosh baruch hu umistadim shmei. Hashem has a certain place reserved for him, which is called Mistarim, the hidden place. And that's where we're saying that Hashem, so to speak, cries over the korban and the goas. So we say Mipnei Geva. So my Mipnei Geva, what does that mean that Hashem is crying because of Geva? So Amar Shmuel by Yitzchak, Mipnei Ga'avosim, Shal Yisrael, because of the pride, the greatness of the Jewish people, Shenitla Mehem and Nitna Lo'ovi Kachavim, that has been taken away from them and given to the goyim. So Hashem cries over that. Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni Omer, Mipnei Gavosa Shal Malchus Shamayim. Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni says it's the greatness of Malchus Shamayim, of Hashem's own kingship that has been taken away. Later on in the Masechta, for example, in the second parak, we're going to talk about that. For example, it says that ever since the Jewish people went into Golos and the Bais Mikdash was destroyed, the Chayas HaKodesh don't have as many wings as before, and there were other changes. There are other changes. In other words, Samar Shah says, actually found in it, he says, a Sefer Yoshan, that they're really the same thing. The greatness of the Jewish people is the greatness of Hashem, and therefore when the Jewish people's greatness is humbled, then so is Hashem, so to speak. So therefore, Hashem is crying over that. So the question is, is there such a thing as crying in the presence of Hashem, or that Hashem himself cries? Now, obviously, you know, the Gemara is not even getting into the fact that Hashem is not a human being, and all these descriptions don't really describe Hashem, because we understand, you know, the Torah always talks about Dibur Torah Koloshim Bnei Adam, and we understand Al Pi Chassidus that it means that there's something Lamaila that is the source of what we call crying down here on earth, and therefore, so that something on a ruchniistic level is appropriate, can be spoken of Lamaila, at least on some levels of Alakos. But the question is there even such a thing? Doesn't Rav Papa say that there's no sadness in Hashem's presence? As the pasuk says, there's glory and beauty in front of him. There's strength and happiness and joy in his place. So in Hashem's place, there's no room for anything other than joy. The answer is loikasha, hob boti gavoi, hob boti baroi. It depends between the inner chambers versus the outer. Gavoi means inner versus hob boti baroi versus the outer chambers. Now, what does that mean? Rashi says, since the pasuk says b'mistarim tivka nafshi, then that means in the inner chambers, on a higher level of elokus, there is such a thing as crying, and Hashem cries for the churban, for the misfortunes of the Jewish people. And then in Bati Baroi, in the outer chambers surrounding that, then there's Oiz V'Ched Rabim Koyma, because they don't, in other words, the idea would be because they don't feel it as keen. Rabbi Hananel says actually the other way around, that in Bati Gavoi, in the inner chamber, in Hashem's own presence, Kaviyachol, there's no room for crying. And when we say about Mistarim Tivka Nafshi, we're talking in Bati Baroi, we're talking about in the outer chambers. Now, what are these inner and outer chambers? So this is, you know, we're talking about things in Olam HaSel Yonim that we're not necessarily going to understand. There is actually, though, there's a at one point in the Yuds, in Tavshin Yud Dalad, that ever went to be Menachem Avol, the Novominsky Rebbe, and they among the things they discussed were the Nusach HaMokam Yinachem Eschem, Sech Shavei Lekti and Yerushalayim, where the Nova Minsker was saying that why are we saying Davka Hamakon? Because we're saying that Hashem from his place should send Nechama to us. And they never discussed that actually that may depend on the two different Gersois over here, whether we say that the crying versus the Chedva exists in Boti Gavoi or Boti Baroi. And the Rebbe explained, in other words, that we're talking about that there's the level of a lakus that relates to the world, and then there's the level of a lakus that's beyond the world. And in Chassidish terminology, the more or less, I guess we would call them the Ora Mamala and Ora Soviv. So on the there's a level which is beyond the world. We can't be asking for Hamakim Yenachem Eschem, that Nechama should be coming from there. It has nothing to do with the worlds anyway. So we have to be talking about the level of a lakus, which is shayach to the world, and that and the Rebbe says that seems to fit better with Rashi's that may fit better with Rashi's explanation than with Rabbeinu Chananel's. Okay, so the question is, Roboti Baroi Loi. So you're telling me that in the outer chambers there's no crying. Again, this is according to Rashi's Girsa an explanation that the crying is in the inner chambers but not the outer ones. According to Rabbeinu Chananel, the question would be the other way around: is there no crying in the inner chambers? V'aksiv v'yikra Hashem alakim tzvakas v'yemahu. Hashem called on that day, meaning the day of the Churban, livchi for crying, or the misbed and for mourning, or the korcha and for going bald, for tearing out your hair in grief, v'lachgor sak. And for putting on sackcloth. Now, of course, Poshet Pshat, we would say, is Hashem is calling that people are going to be doing that. But the Gemara is understanding that Kavyachal Hashem himself did those at that time also. There's actually a medrash in Eicha Rabba, where at the time of the Churban, Hashem, so to speak, speaks to the Malachim and asks them blow by blow. So what does a human king do when a disaster happens to him, when his Ben Yochid passes away, for example? And they tell him one thing after another. He tears his clothes, he does this, he does that, and Hashem, Kavyachol, does each one of those things. So we see, in other words, that B'chi is Shayach, is Shayach by Hashem, in Boti Baroi, according to Rashi, and in Boti Davoi, according to Rabbeinu Chananel. The answer is Shayni Churban Beis HaMikdash. It's different at the time of the Churban, Da'afu B'malach Esholim Bohu. Even the Malachim of Peace cried, which means, Rabbeinu Chananel says, that these are malachim that Hashem had sent to make shalom, and nevertheless they weren't able to accomplish shalom, and so they cried and returned disappointed that they weren't able to fulfill their shlichus of shalom. So even they cried. So therefore, we can say that at that point there was crying where there wouldn't normally be. Shenema, as the pasuk says, "Hein er elam tzaku chutza." Behold, the er elim are crying outside. Er elim is a type of malachim. Tosfos points out that Poshet Pshat would be that Elim means the top of the Mizbeach. Yeshaya himself calls it Ariel, as in Hoy Ariel Ariel. And we actually had this past Shabbos, the Haftorah, also talked about the Mizbeach and mentioned that Umeho Ariel or Lamaila Akronis Abba, that the Ariel means the top of the Mizbeach, where there's the fire, because the fire was in the shape of a lion, which is an Ari. Anyway, so Tosfos says that the simple pshat of Er Elam refers to the Mizbeach, but the Gemara is doushening that it means Malachim. So behold, the Er Elim are crying outside. Malachi Shalom Mau Yivkoyun, the Malachim of Peace are crying bitterly. So therefore, so we see that at the time of the Churban, there was crying much more than there would be at any other time. So when we said before, when we start him Tivka Nafshi, we're talking about on an ongoing basis, that in Boti Gavoy or Boti Baroy, according to the different Gersois, there's no crying, whereas in the other one there is. Again, to put it in terms that the Rebbe was talking over there in that Nicham Avelim, you have the level of Alakos that relates to the worlds and the level of Alakos that's beyond the worlds, Mamale and Soviv, and it's Shayach in one and not in the other. Another Pasuk continuing the next pasuk over there in Yumia, the Damoya Tidma, the Seirad Eni Dima, the pasuk continues. My tear will tear, and my eyes will shed tears. Ki nishba eder Hashem, because the flock of Hashem, meaning the Jewish people, have been taken captive. So there's three expressions of tears: Damoya, Tidma, and Dima. So Amar Rav Elazar Shalosh Dmori Salolu Lama. Why is the pasuk referring to three different tears that Hashem cries? Kaviyachol, achas al mikdash rishon. One is because of the destruction of the first base mikdash. The achas al mikdash sheni, a second one for the second base mikdash. The achas al Yisrael should golem and koyman, and the third one for the fact that the Jewish people were sent into golos. The ikad amri, another version is achas al bitul Torah, that the third one is for bitul Torah, for the fact that the Jewish people are not able to learn Torah. That the Jewish people are not learning Torah on the proper level. So the Gemara says, "Bishleim lamanda omar Yisrael shegalu." I understand if we say that it means that they went into Golos. Hainirachiv kinishpa eder Hashem. That explains the end of the pasuk that it says that the flock of Hashem have been taken captive. So the flock of Hashem means the Jewish people. Taken captive means went into Golos. So therefore, that's exactly what it means. Then it means that the Jewish people have been sent into Golos, and Hashem is crying a tear over that. What does Bittul Torah have anything to do with the flock of Hashem? And the answer is, we don't mean stam Bittul Torah, that a person is able to learn thoroughly and they're not. It means kiven shegoli yisrael memkoyman. Once the Jewish people have gone into Golos from their proper place, ein lecha Bittul Torah gadol mizeh. There's no greater Bittul Torah than that, because that prevents the Jewish people from being able to learn Torah in the proper way. And it also means, among other things, it means that most mitzvahs, are not applicable. So therefore, according to that opinion, that's what Hashem has to cry about. We learn in a braisa. There are three things that Hashem cries about every day. And again, we have to understand with all of this, of course, you know, so Hashem is not actually crying, but we mean, in other words, there's something that can be described in our terms as crying, meaning what happens or a person cries over something when they're not able to do something about it, so instead they cry. So Hashem kavyochol, when we're saying that Hashem is crying over these things, means kavyochol, that Hashem's hands are tied, that given the way that he set up the world to work, then these things require us to change, and Hashem is not changing them. So the only thing to do is to be ma'orah rachmanos. There's a maimer of the Rebbe Maharash on that subject. In fact, and he mentions also this boti gavoy and boti baroy that we talked about before. In other words, Hashem is crying over the fact that we're in Golos. But what do you mean? Isn't it in Hashem's hands to take us out of Golos? And the answer is it is. But on the other hand, the fact is that right now you have Yinikas Achitzonim, and in order not to give them more energy than they already have and than they already deserve, then Hashem has to wait for us to do something about it rather than just unilaterally taking us out of Golos right now. This was also, the Rebbe Marash said this maimer 150 years ago. I mean, since then, the Rebbe has told us the Avodas HaBirurim is done, and therefore there should be nothing preventing Hashem from stopping crying and taking us out of Golos. So why it is something that we can't even begin to understand. Anyway, going back to the Gemara, Tanan Abanan, Shlosha HaKadosh Baruch Hu Boichalein B'chol Yom. There were three things that Hashem cries about every day. Number one, Al She'efshe Lasek V'Torah V'Ein Osek. Somebody who is able to occupy himself with Torah and does not. So Hashem cries over the missed potential. Al She'efshe Lasek V'Torah V'Osek. The second one is somebody who is not able to be Osek in Torah, and he is Osek. Now, why should Hashem be crying about that? There are actually some of the Mephoshim who say that, okay, maybe that one is tears of joy. Look at this. This person is not able. He's not in a position. His parnasa or whatever doesn't allow it. And he's still taking time to learn Torah. So according to that, an explanation is that Hashem is crying tears of joy over such a person. However, Marsha says that no. What we're talking about over here, the word oisik in these two sentences means having a job. So efshar lasek v'Torah v'eina oisik means that a person is able to learn Torah, and not only he doesn't learn Torah, he doesn't even have a job. So he just sits around doing nothing. So Hashem cries over the wasted potential. And the second one, she'i efshar lasek v'Torah v'oisik, where the person is not able to learn Torah because he's too busy with his business, so Hashem cries over that. Because Hashem is saying he wants that person to take some time off his business and spend time learning Torah. A different explanation is that Oisik Batoda over here means particularly somebody who is learning the deeper aspects of Torah, even though he's not Shayach there yet. He should still be learning on a basic level. So he's trying to learn the deeper parts and he's not even really understanding those. And therefore, like, he's losing out, at least like this. If he was learning the basic parts, he'd be able to get something out of it. Now, like this, he's not really getting anything comprehensible out of it. So that's another explanation of Oisik Batorah, She'ef Shalas Batorah Oisik. Anyway, and the third one is Val Parnas Amisgar Al Tzibur, a leader of a community who prides himself over the Tzibur. This is also included, and we said before, Mepnei Geva, that Hashem cries over that here he gave this person leadership over the Tzibur, and he's abusing it to make himself greater. Further on this topic about the tremendous catastrophe of the Churban, the Gemara says, Rebbe have a knock at Sefer Kinnos. One time Rebbe was holding a Sefer Kinnos, meaning Megillas Eicha, the Kakori Begave, and he's reading from Megillas Eicha. He mota lahai psukah, he reached the following pasuk, the beginning of Perek Beis, Hishlach v'shamayim eret, Hashem threw down the Jewish people from heaven to earth. Nafal min yadeh, at that moment, the scroll of Megillas Eicha fell from his hand. Omar, he said, mi igra rom lebeira amikta, it means the Jewish people fell. Marsha explains, in other words, he himself may have been standing on the roof at that point, and all of a sudden he accidentally dropped the sefer, and it fell from a great height to a great depth. So he says, now I understand what the pasuk is saying, is the Jewish people fell from a high roof down to a deep pit. In other words, the ultimate falling that a person could. So in other words, it brought home to him how great the descent and the catastrophe of the Churban was. Marsha, in fact, points out that the Lebeira Mikta into a deep pit represents also Golas Bavel, which is a very deep, low-lying place, as the Gemara says in some places. There's also an explanation on it, in fact, that the vote is for the Megillah itself doesn't make a great deal of difference whether it's on a high roof or whether it's in a deep pit. Either way, it's still intact. But he's saying, in other words, that the Jewish people, we may still be here, but look what a tremendous descent. Look what a tremendous descent we suffered. Okay, so now the Gemara goes on to another topic, which Marsha explains that now we're done with this topic of the Chachamim who were crying over various psukim and Hashem himself crying over various things, and now we're getting back to something related to the topic that we were talking about before, about Yireh Yeroah, that a Yid goes to the Bais Mikdash on the Shalosh Regalim to see the Shechina and to be seen by Hashem. So the Gemara says, Rebbe and Reb Chiya have a shakli ba'azli ba'urcha. One time Rebbe and Reb Chiya were walking along the road. Kim matu lahu masa. They came to a certain town. Amri, they said, Ikat surhum en abanan hacha. Well, they asked, Ikat surhum en abanan hacha. Is there a young Tamad Chacham in this town? Nezel and a kabel afe. Let's go and greet him and have the mitzvah of honoring Chachamim. Amri, so they told him, Ikat surhum en abanan hacha. Yes, there is a young Tamad Chacham over here. Umo'urenayim, who when he's blind. Amalei Reb Chiya l'Rebbe, so Reb Chiya says to Rebbe, don't bother, tiv'at, you turn around, you go back, lo tezalzel b'nesiusa, don't treat your nesius casually, you're after all the nasi, you shouldn't be going and then lowering yourself to go and visit a blind person, even if he has a Talmid Chacham. Ezel anova, ekbalafe, so I'll go alone, and I'll be makabel ponim him, and I'll give him honor, it's beneath your dignity. Rebbe wasn't going to go for that. Takfe, he grabbed a hold of Reb Chiya, va'ozel ba'adeh, and went with him. If you go, and I'm going. It's not a lack of cover for the nesius. So they went and greeted this Talmid Chacham. Ki havu miftiri minei. When they left him, omelahu, the Chacham told them, atem ikbaltem ponim anirim ve'enim royim. You have come to greet a face, meaning mine, who's able to be seen but cannot see, meaning I myself who was blind, but you came to greet me. Kizku lahakva ponim aroyim ve'inanirin. May you have the schus to greet the face that sees but is not seen, namely the face, the presence of Hashem. Marsha says, in particular, we're talking now. Rebbe and Reb Chiya lived after the Churban, so in particular, this Chacham is telling them that you should have the schus to in Olam Abba to be mekabel Hashem's ponim, and even on a higher level than we had before, because nowadays, even in the time of the Beis Mikdash, we didn't fully see Hashem's presence. But la'asid lavoi v'ro'o kol basar yachdav kipi Hashem diber. So we're going to be able to see all the course with our physical eyes. So he's giving them the wish. Then he's giving them the bracha that they should be able to see that level of all the course la'asid lavoi. So Rebbe says, you know, it's a good thing I went. Eichu hashta. Now look what would have happened over here if I hadn't come. If you were eichu hashta menaita mahar b'chosa. Now, if I hadn't come, if I had listened to you and said it's beneath my dignity, then you would have prevented me from getting such a beautiful bracha. Omrulei, and they said to the Talmud Chacham, Miman Shmielach. Who did you hear such a nusach from? They assume that he himself wasn't capable of coming up with such an idea on his own. So he tells them, "Mipirke did Rabbi Yaakov Shmieli. I heard it from the shir of Rabbi Yaakov. The Rabbi Yaakov ish kvar chitya have a makbel apid rabbi kol yoma. Rabbi Yaakov ish kvar chitya used to go and greet and visit his rebbe every day. Ki kash when he got old. Rashi says it means Rabbi Yaakov." Hagoyes Habach though takes out the word Rabbi Yaakov. So apparently Hagoyes Habach understands that Rashi wants to say it means when the Rebbe got old. Whereas according to the Gersa we have in front of us in Rashi, it would mean when Rabbi Yaakov got old. Anyway, Omer Loi Lomit Starmar. So he, the Rebbe, said to him, "Don't trouble yourself. Dola Yochel Mar, you can't. You're having a hard time of it." Omer Loi. So Rabbi Yaakov says, "Why should I stop visiting you? Mi Zuter Mai Dechtibu Barabonon." Is it a small thing, this, that it says in a pasuk about the Chachamim? V'chi oid l'netzach. It says he will go on to live forever. Lo yirah shachas. He will not see shachas, which is which is Gehenim. Ki yirah Chachamim yamusu. The next pasuk continues. Ki yirah Chachamim yamusu. Because he will see the Chachamim die. So simple pshat in the pasuk means, Tosfos says it means that the it's talking about Rishoyim. V'chi oid l'netzach lo yirah shachas. Does a Rosha think that he's going to live forever and never see the grave? Does he not realize ki yira chachamim yamusu? He sees that even chachamim pass away, so he should realize that one day he's going to also and do tshuva. But here, Rabbi Yaakov took it as a statement that because he sees the chachamim pass away, therefore he will live forever and not see Gehenna. Therefore, he said, "Uma haroya chachamim misosin yichya." So Madach, a person who sees Chachamim after they passed away, is going to live in the schus of that, b'chayeh, and Allah has kama v'kama, how much more so when he sees them when they're alive. So therefore, I want to continue seeing you while you're alive. Therefore, says Rabbi Yaakov to his Rebbe, I still want to continue visiting you every day, even though it's hard for me. By the way, you have the question, what happened to Gedolim Tzadikim and Misosan Yosim and b'chayeh? So how does the Kabbalah work? So there's a sefer from one of the Baalei HaTosfos called Yechusei Tanoim Ba'Meroyim. Officially, it deals with the brief biographies and whatever of the Chachamim mentioned in the Gemara. But it also, in the course of that, gives a lot of explanations about different things in the Gemara. So he explains when it comes to Gedolim Tzadikim Mimisos and Yosim V'Chayeim. Well, when it comes to learning Torah from them, you're able to in a way when they're alive. More than after they passed away. Okay, the Alter Rebbe says in Tanya that the Yaakov B'Chayoi means that the Tzaddik's Emuna and Av of Yira is available more in the world, but at least from the point of view of actually being able to have a personal relationship with the Rebbe, that it's easier to do when he's alive, and therefore that's what the Gemara is saying in the Kavach HaOmer over here. The Gemara tells another story, which doesn't really directly seem to be related to this, but the relationship seems to be that we were talking about visiting one's rebbe, and here we're going to be talking about visiting one's yeshiva. The Gemara says, "Rav Idi Avur de Rav Yaakov Bar Idi, Rav Idi, the father of Rav Yaakov Bar Idi." It's possible that it's maybe also the same Rav Yaakov that we were just talking about. That might also be the connection. Anyway, the pastor is not, though. It doesn't seem it works out time wise. But anyway, this Rav Idi. He used to spend 3 months traveling on the road and one day in the Beis Medrash. So in other words, Rashi says he lived 3 months travel away from the Beis Medrash. So after Pesach, he would leave and travel for 3 months. and be able to spend one day in the Beis Medrash, and then he has to turn around and start heading back home, and then he would do the same thing after Sukkot. So Sach HaKol is only in the Beis Medrash 2 days a year. Marsha explains that one possibility is he wanted to be home with his wife together for Yom Tov. So Shavuos, okay, he had no choice. If he wants to stay home for Shavuos, he's not going to be able to travel at all. But at least Pesach and Sukkot, he's going to be home with his wife. And then Marsha says maybe not necessarily. Maybe it's just that not necessarily he lived 3 months away from the Beis Medrash, but he used to have to travel to go look for Parnosa, and it took him 3 months because on the way he had to find temporary jobs. Anyway, so Sach HaKol is only in the Beis Medrash 2 days a year. So the other Chachamim in the Beis Medrash used to call him in a mocking way the yeshiva, the one day yeshiva student, like oichmer a tamid chacham, oichmer a yeshiva student when he's only here 2 days a year. Cholashdaite. Rav Idi felt very bad about that. And he applied to himself a pasuk from Iyov that says, I've become a mockery for my colleagues. But Rav Yechanan, who realized how great this Rav Idi is, he says to him, I plead with you, don't punish the Chachamim. In other words, don't be so offended that you were insulted by them that you're going to be moisted din l'shamayim, that you're going to go complain about them to Hashem, because that can have very severe consequences to them. So don't do that. I'll take care of the matter, says Rabbi Yechanan, so they don't make fun of you anymore. Nafik Rabbi Yechanan lebe medrash v'dorash. So Rabbi Yechanan went to the base medrash and darshin. The pasuk says v'oisi yoim yoim yedroshon. The pasuk says me Hashem says day by day. They search for me, the das drocha yachpotzun, and they seek to know my ways. So we're focusing on the word yoim. So v'chiva yoim doshenose v'alala in doshenose. Why the word yoim yoim? What do you mean day by day they search for Hashem? And what about the nights? Marsha says, since it says yoim yoim, so it implies that it means only the daytime, that we're saying dafka to be mamai at the nights. So it means Ella, Yom Aloch, it comes to tell you, Kola Osik Batoda, Afilu Yom Echa Bashana, a person who is fully involved in learning Torah, even 1 day a year, and in this case, Rav Idi is 2 days a year, Mala, all of our Kosov, Kila Osik, Kalashana Kola, so Hashem considers it as if he had been Osik in Torah the entire year. This is our derech, like you have the expression, a person is where his thoughts are. Since Rav Idi's thoughts are on the Beis Medrash, and his whole travel is for the purpose of going there, so therefore it can be considered like he's there the entire year. Continues Rav Yechanan, the same way is true as far as punishment. Dichtiv, you find by the Meraglim, the Mispar Yom Mashatartim Asa'aret, it says the number of days that you spied out Eretz Yisrael, you're going to spend in the Midbar. So what do you mean? What do you mean? They didn't sin for 40 years. They only sinned, the Meraglim sinned in their travel of Eretz Yisrael for 40 days. So it comes to tell you, a person who does an Avera even 1 day a year, again, we mean, where he's completely involved in that Avera that day, and maybe the rest of his time is also spent planning for it. So then Hashem considers it as though he was over the whole year. There's a Tosfos in Sota that asks what happened to Meruba Midat Torah Midas Koronos. So if we're saying Midas Koronos, Hashem is doing a year for a day, then Midat Torah has to be greater than that. Marsha says, okay, what it means is that Midat Torah is never less than Midas Koronos. In a case like this, it could be equal to it. Usually it's more, but at least it can't be less than equal, which is what it is over here, 1 year for each day, both for Koronos and for Torah. Now, getting back to the halachas, to the main topics of our Mishnah, we said a zehu katan. So we said that a katan does have to be brought on aliyah l'regel. So we said, what is the definition of a katan who has to be brought on aliyah l'regel? So we had Beth Shammai and Beth Hillel. Beth Shammai had said, kol she'eino yochel lirkov al kseifa shel aviv. If he's not able to ride on his father's shoulders, then he's too small to be brought for aliyah l'regel. And Basil had said, only if he can actually walk holding his father's hand. But the Mishnah had mentioned, both according to Beis Shammai and according to Basil, that we're saying that he's able to walk from Yerushalayim to the Harabayis. I forgot to mention in the Mishnah, actually, an interesting point is, why are we saying only until the Harabayis? You have to go further. You have to go to the Azara. So, okay, the Tosfos Yom Tov says, listen, once you've already made it to the Harabayis, up all those steps, then to go to the Azara is fairly easy. There's the Meshech Chochma brings an explanation on it. He says, because the halacha is that they're allowed to expand the Azara if they want to. The king, the Navi, the Urim V'Tumim all have to agree to that, and then they can expand the Azara. And how far can they expand it? Until the end of the Harabayis. So therefore, the Mishnah mentions walking until the Harabayis, because that's the furthest the Azara could ever reach. Anyway, so the Gemara asks, Masti Flutter Zera, Ad Hocha Man Asye. What do you mean? That he's able to walk, or he's able to be carried from Yerushalayim until the Harabayis. Who brought him all the way there? The Pashas, we're not talking about a kid who lives in Yerushalayim. In other words, Rashi explains the question. If we're assuming that they came to Yerushalayim without the mother, well then, so who brought him until Yerushalayim? That we should say that now, as long as he's able to walk from Yerushalayim to the Harabayis, then he'd be chayiv and aliyah l'regel. L'chore, his mother is not chayev in aliyah l'regel. So Rashi explains like this. We're assuming, for purposes of the question, that the mother did not come to Yerushalayim. So therefore, if she didn't come, then a child who's old enough already to leave his mother for a while to go to Yerushalayim is also necessarily old enough to be able to walk with his father. So is able to walk holding his father's hand. So who brought him there that we're saying that he's such a little kid that we have to talk about whether he's able to walk, or Bishama is saying even if he's only little enough to ride on his father's shoulders, at that time he wouldn't be away from his mother for that long. The answer would be, up until this point, from wherever city they live until Yerushalayim, his mother is chayev in simcha, because fine, she's not chayev in aliyah l'regel, but she is chayev in the mitzvah of simcha, which implies eating meat of shlomim, and therefore, so she and she has that as well. Rashi says that she has the mitzvah herself. Tosfos brings from other Gemaras that her husband has a mitzvah to be mesameach. There's a discussion in different places about the parameters of it, but in any case, the point is, since she's going to have to eat shlomim, and then necessarily it means she has to come to Yerushalayim. Therefore, so up till this point that his mother is chayiv and simcha, I see, seime, then okay, his mother brought him, so he might be taka, a little kid, and still he was with his mother the whole time, so therefore we can only talk about from Yerushalayim. Mikan va'elach, from that point, since his mother is not chayiv and aliyah l'regel, So im yachol lalas leches b'yadish al ovim Yerushalayim l'harabayis, if he's able to go uphill and to hold his father's hand and go from Yerushalayim all the way to the Harabayis chayev, then he's chayev be'iloy potter, and if not, then he's potter. So that's what it is. In other words, his mother, so at the beginning of the Masechta, we mentioned Rashi said that his father and his mother are chayev and chinuch. There is actually, as I mentioned there, a good deal of discussion among Rishonim and Achronim about the exact details of that. Is a mother really chayev in her children's chinuch, or is it exclusively a mitzvah on the father? And of course, the mother helps out, but maybe it's not technically a mitzvah on her. So one possibility is that Rashi is talking, based on our Gemara over here, that the mother is the one who makes it possible for him to come to Yerushalayim in the first place by accompanying the family to Yerushalayim rather than staying home. So the Gemara says, Heshiv Rebbe Tachas Beis Hillel L'Divrei Beis Shammai. Rebbe, standing in for Beis Hillel, asks on Beis Shammai, who says that as long as the child is able to ride on his father's shoulders, then he's old enough to have to go on Aliyah L'Regel. So how could Beis Shammai say that? We have a pasuk in Sefer Shmuel, after Shmuel was born, where Chana, so every Yom Tov, it says over there, Chana would go on Aliyah L'Regel together with his family. This time it says, V'chana loy alasa, Chana did not go on Aliyah L'Regel, ki omra l'isha, because she said to her husband, Ad yigomel anar, I'm waiting until the child is weaned, the baby is going to be nursing for 24 months, 2 years, Rabbi Yosef, and then I will bring him to the Mishkan. The question is, while Shmuel the Yochel Lirkov al Ksefiv shall Aviv Hava, on the face of it, during those 24 months, Shmuel is already old enough to be riding on his father's shoulders, even if he's not old enough during that time to be walking on foot with his father, holding his hand. But at least, according to Beis Shammai, who says that the minimum age for Aliyah L'Regel is that he's old enough to be carried on his father's shoulders, well, surely during those 2 years, Shmuel reached that age. So why is Chana keeping him home? It must be, says Rebbe, must be like Vesilo, that it's only when he's at an older age, only when he's able to walk. In fact, Rashi uses the expression, if he's able to ride on his father's shoulders, Mirshalayim laharabayis, Rashi says, Kol shekin mishilo the Mishkan, how much more so from Shiloh to the Mishkan? So an interesting point is, why the more so? And the answer is, if you actually ever visit the ancient city of Shiloh, and they have over there a site, which they think it's a flat area over there about the right size for the Mishkan, so they think that's where it was. It actually is slightly downhill of the town. So therefore, so if a child is old enough to go on his father's shoulders uphill from Yerushalayim to the Harabayis, all the more so he'd be capable of going a little bit downhill from the town of Shiloh to the Mishkan. And yet Chana is saying that I'm going to keep him home until then, until he's weaned. Omalei Avua, so his father answers him. So the Avua would mean his father would have to mean the pastor's Rebbe's father. On the other hand, there's a different Girsa, Abaya, and the end, and that would mean, in other words, that the original discussion wasn't Rebbe, because Abaya lived many generations after Rebbe. So it would have to be that, in other words, this discussion was not Rebbe, but rather there's a different Girsa that says it was Reb Zera. Anyway, so Omalei Avua or Omalei Abaya, the Litai Meich, knew, and according to your own Svara that you're asking about Shmuel, Tikshilo Chana Gufa, why don't you ask about Chana herself, Miloi Mechaiva B'Simcha, we just said that a woman is Chayiv in Simcha, or at least that her husband has the actual Chiyuv to be Mesameach her, so why is she staying home, and it means therefore that she's not partaking of Korbanot Shlomim during the Yontav. So we have to say, Ela Chana mafankusi yaser to chazia baby Shmuel. What must have happened is that Chana saw that Shmuel is particularly delicate. V'chosha baby Shmuel, v'chosha de'urcha. So she's concerned about that Shmuel might get sick on the road. And therefore, she was afraid to take him to Shiloh until he's a little bit older, until he's 2 years old, and he's a little healthier and is able to make the trip. So nothing to do with. So therefore, so Beis Shammai would say, there's no proof from there that he wasn't chayev in aliyah l'regel. If he had been a healthier child, then or if Chana hadn't been afraid for his health, then yes, she might have brought him on aliyah l'regel even before that, because he's old enough already to go on his father's shoulders. But Hayos because she saw that he was delicate, that's why he didn't end up going those first 2 years. So no contradiction to Beis Shammai's opinion. The Gemara continues, Boy Reb Shimon, on the side of it here, it says Ben Lakish, has a question. Katan Chigil Divei Beis Shammai, what about, according to Beis Shammai, if the child is lame? Now, according to Beis Hillel, obviously, if he's lame, he's potter because he can't walk with his father. He can't walk holding his father's hand. But what if, according to Beis Shammai, that all we care about is that he's able to be carried on his father's shoulders, but let's say he's lame, he himself would be unable to walk. The Summa L'Divrei Shnehem, or according to both Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, if the child is blind, so even a blind child is able to hold his father's hand and walk, but what would be the divrei shneim, according to both Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, mahu, what would be the din? Are they chayev? Because after all, it's their father bringing them and not them. Or do we say, we learned earlier that a lame person, or even lame in one leg, we said it is potter from aliyah l'regel. Similarly, we said a blind person is potter, and we had an opinion that even if he's blind in one eye, then he's potter. So therefore, so maybe we would say that since as an adult he's going to be potter, maybe he's potter now. So the Gemara says, hey chidami, what's the scenario? Are we talking about where it's a permanent condition? He's lame and he's never going to be able to be healed, and he's blind and he's never going to be able to see. Well, of course he's potter. Hashtag Godo Potter, Kotan Miboya. Even an adult would be potter in such a scenario. Do you need to ask about a child who's only coming because of chinuch in the first place? Of course not. The answer is Loit Tzricha, yeah, but Reb Shimon's question is only necessary b'chigur sheyochal leispashet v'sumah sheyochal leispateach. If you have, he's lame, but he'd be able to be healed from it sometime. So Rashi and Tosfos both explain that we're talking about he'd be able to be healed during his childhood. So sometime we've consulted with doctors. They say they're able to cure him, so that while he's still a child, he'll be able to walk or he'll be able to see. Of a sumer sheyachol leispateach. So now what would be the din? Do we say that since sometime during his childhood, he's going to end up being cured, and therefore at that point, as an older child and as an adult, he's going to be chayev. Maybe even now, his father was already chayev to bring him. Tosfos spells it out. As an adult, he's going to be chayev daraisa. So therefore, as a katan, he'd be chayev in chinuch. On the other hand, we could say that look, in his current condition, he's not going to be chayev in aliyah l'regel. Fine, once he's cured, then we can start bringing him, but we're not necessarily chayev to bring him now. So what's the din? So Amar Abaye says, here's the rule. Kol heichad begodim chayev daraisa. Whenever an adult would be chayev daraisa. So if he's a cotton, then we're mechanechim on a derabanan level. Kol heichad begodol poter midaraisa. But if in his current state as an adult he'd be poter daraisa, midrabanan cotton nami poter, then derabanan he's also poter. So yes, if the child is blind or lame, even though he can be cured later on during his childhood, but right now he's blind, and if he were blind as an adult he'd be poter. Right now he's lame. If he were lame as an adult, he'd be potter. Therefore, now he's potter as well, and his father does not have to bring him. The Mishnah had said, "Beshama oimim ha'ri'iyah shtei kesef v'chola." We said that Beshama be'asil will argue about the oilas ri'iyah and the shama chagiga, what the minimum cost for each one of them. Beshama said the oilas ri'iyah has to be worth at least 2 ma, and the shama chagiga at least 1 ma, and Beshama said the other way around. So now let's talk about what the logic is behind their different opinions. Tanan Abanan, Beshama Oimim Hariyah Shtei Kesef, Vachagiga Mar Kesef. What's the logic, says Beshama? Why should the Oilas Ri'iyah have to be twice as expensive? Because Ri'iyah Oila Kula L'Gavaya, after all, the Oilas Ri'iyah has an advantage. It's more important than the Shama Chagiga. It's completely offered to Hashem, Mashenkin V'Chagiga, as opposed to the Chagiga is a Korban Shlomim, and a Korban Shlomim is mostly eaten by the Kohenim and the owners, so it's on a lower level. Therefore, it can be worth less. But Oid, furthermore, Beshama says, Matzinu Ba'atzeres, Sheriva Behana Kosaba Oilas, Yosim V'Shlomim. We find when it comes to Shavuos. Shavuos is the one time of year when the tzibur brings a shlomim. This is, we say, in Ezer Mekoyim and Zivchei Shalmei Tzibur Vashramos. So they bring Shalmei Tzibur on Shavuos. The Shalmei Tzibur consists of only 2 sheep. Meanwhile, they're bringing a lot more oilas than that. They're bringing 10 animals as an oila. Shivas Kvotim Tmimim, Upaya Ben Bakor, Ba'elim Shnaim. So they're bringing 10 oilas and only 2 shlomim. So you see, therefore, that the oilas are more important and should cost more than the shlomim. That's Bishamai. Or Bishilol, I mean. Bishilol says the other way around. What's the logic, they say? Shechagiga yeshna lifnei hadibur, because there was such a thing as a korban chagiga, namely a korban shlomim, before Hashem even spoke, before Matan Torah, they were already bringing shlomim, which we're going to talk about in great detail in the Gemara later. But Rashi explains at the end of Parshas Mishpatim, it tells certain details of what happened in the days before Matan Torah. So it mentions of it there by Yishlachas Nari Bnei Yisrael, and it says they brought shlomim. Rashi explained, even though that's in Parshas Mishpatim, and Matan Torah is described in Parshas Yisrael, this is one of those examples of Ein Muktim on the Ochra Torah that. That story at the end of Parshas Mishpatim is going back and describing some events that happened in the days before Matan Torah. So it says that they brought shlomim. Now, the Gemara is going to ask that it also says they brought oilas. But right now, Beis Hillel is focusing on the shlomim that they brought. There was a chagiga, there was a shlomim, lifnei adimah, mashenkin b'ri'iyah, as opposed to there was no oilas ri'iyah. Now, that's what the Gemara is going to ask soon. There was an oila, so we're going to answer that. So we'll get back to that. So that's one thing. First of all, then Beshilol says there's an advantage to a shlomim that we see it was brought even before Matan Torah. But oid, furthermore, says Beshilol, matzinu b'nesiim shadriba behenak kasev b'shlomim yosim b'moilas. Look at the nesiim where the proportion was the other way around. The Chanukah semizbeach every day the nesiim are bringing their korbanos. We learn it during Chanukah and we say it during the first days of Nisan. And every day we have over there, every day they had a couple of animals for an oila, a Parban Boker, Parban Boker, Achad Ayelach, and Kosmin Eshana, Kevasachim, and Shnasev Oila. So they had three Oilas. But then, all Zavachashlamim, Boker Shnayim, Elim Chamisha, Atudim Chamisha, Kosmin Eshana Chamisha. So every day they had 17 Shlamim. So they had a lot more Shlamim than Oilas. So therefore, so Basilil says that's the reason that the Chagiga, which is a Shlamim, should have an advantage over an Oila. So the question is, Basilil, my time and like Amrika Bishamai, why doesn't Basilil agree with Bishamai's Svara? What do they see wrong in Bishamai's Svara that there's advantages to an Oila over a Shlamim? The answer is, they say the true proofs that you Bishamai are bringing are not just such strong proofs. Your first argument that you're saying that an oila su'iyah is better because it's completely offered to Hashem, you can say, on the contrary, we would argue that the chagiga is better because you have two different consumptions in there. The mizbeach consumes part of it and people consume part of it. So therefore, in a way, that's better than an oila where there's only one consumption where it's completely consumed on the mizbeach. We talked about at the beginning of the Masechta, something that the Rebbe explained, the Makot Sichos, that we often find that Beis Shammai looks at the generality of something and Beis Hillel looks into the details. So when you look at the overall picture, yeah, an Oila, which is burnt completely on the Mizbeach, seems to outrank a Shlomim, but Beis Hillel says, when you look into the details, you find that actually maybe a Shlomim is greater. And with the Kamet Nelech Matzeres, you're saying we should learn from Shavuos, where you have more Oilas than Shlomim. No, done in Korban Yochid, the Korban Yochid, vein done in Korban Yochid, the Korban Sibur. Basilil is going to say, it's better to learn the Chagiga, after all, the Korban Yochid, better to learn from the Nesiim, which those were also Korbanus brought by the Yechidim. So we'll learn that from that, vein done in Korban Yochid, the Korban Sibur, rather than learning from the Korbanus of Shavuos, which is a Korban Sibur. Okay, or Beis Shammai, my time in the Amikah Beis Hillel. What does Beis Shammai see wrong with Beis Hillel's Svaris? Beis Hillel, again, said, number one, you see that Chagiga was Lifnei Adibur, and number two, you see that the Nesiim brought more Shlomim than Oilas. So Beis Shammai would say, Dika Amit Chagiga Adipa, the Yeshna Lifnei Adibur. You're saying the Chagiga is better because it existed before Matan Torah. So what? Re'iya Nami Yeshna Lifnei Adibur. The Re'iya also, because the same Pasuk also mentioned that there was an Oila. And the Gemara is going to explain that according to Beis Shammai, that Oila was an Oila's Re'iya. So we're going to have to explain soon. We're going to say that Beis Hillel holds that it was a different type of Oila. We'll get back to that soon. But therefore, so there's no advantage to a chagiga to a shlomim over an oila because both of them were brought before Matan Torah. And udkaamet neilaf minasiim, you Beis Hillel are saying let's learn from the Nesiim. No, says Beis Shammai. Dunin davar anoig l'dodus min davar anoig l'dodus. Fakev, we have more reason to learn from Shavuos because both the chagiga and the korbanos of Shavuos continue to last as long as the Beis Hamikdash is standing. They ain't done in Dabra, no Gladuris, Medovashain and no Gladuris, rather than learning from something which is a one-time thing. The Nesiim's Korbanos is a one-time thing, so therefore we're not going to learn from it. Okay, the Gemara asked to Beis Hillel, my Shnoch Chagiga de Yeshna Lifnei Adibur. Now, why? Let's go back to Beis Hillel. They're saying that there was a Chagiga before Matan Torah, Dichtiv by Yizbuchu Zvachim Shlomim, because in Mishpatim over there it describes that Moshe sent Nare Bnei Yisrael, meaning the Bechorim, and they offered Shlomim. Re'iyanami, Oksiv by Yalo Oilas. The same Pasuk also says earlier, right before that, says they brought Oilas. So they brought both Oilas and Shlomim. So why is Beis Hillel insisting that there was a Shlomim and saying there was no Oilas? Yeah? The answer is, Kasabri Beis Hillel is going to hold Oila Sheikrivi Yisrael Bamidbar Oilas Tomid Havoi. The Oila that the Jewish people brought in the desert was not an Oilas Re'iya. In other words, they were. There was reason to bring an Oilas Re'iya because they're seeing the presence of Hashem by Yiru Eselakei Yisrael, it says a few psukim later. But nevertheless, Beis Hillel is holding that the Oila that they brought is not the Oilas Re'iya specifically for that occasion, but rather the general Oilas Tomid, the fact that you have to have a Korban Tomid twice a day. So therefore, so you see that there was no Oilas Re'iya. So they're bringing Vayalo Oilas because they had to bring a Korban Tomid. Aside from that, they brought Shlomim. So according to Beis Hillel, Shlomim is the only thing brought that had to do with the occasion, and therefore Shlomim outranked Oila, say Beis Hillel. As opposed to a Bishamai Sabri, where Bishamai holds no Ola Shri Kriri Shrova Midbar, that Ola the Jewish people brought in the desert, Ola Sri'iya Havoi, it was actually an Ola Sri'iya, in honor of the fact that they're seeing Hashem's presence by Yahshua Sadakim. So therefore, we can learn from it for the future that an Ola, that you had both an Ola Sri'iya and a Shama Chagiga, and therefore they say that that takes away Basil's argument that a Shlomim is greater than an Ola, that a Chagiga is greater than an Ola Sri'iya. So the Gemara points out, Omer Abaya, Bet Shammai, Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Shmuel, Kul of Sviru, Oyla, she's Kriwi, Yisrael, Bamidbo, Oyla, Sui, Yavoi, all these three Tanoim, Bet Shammai and Rabbi Lozer, Magoyes HaBach says it's actually Rabbi Yezer, and Rabbi Shmuel, Kul of Sviru, Oyla, she's Kriwi, Yisrael, Bamidbo, Oyla, Sui, Yavoi, they all hold that this Oyla that was brought on the 5th of Sivan, the day before Matan Torah, in the Midbar, was an Ola Sri'iya, in honor of the fact that Vayachzu Aselakei Yisrael, Vayiru Aselakei Yisrael, Vayachzu Aselakeim, yeah. On the other hand, Ubes Hillel, V'Rabbi Akiva, V'Rabbi Yisag, really, Kulus Tvirilu, Ola Sheikru Yisrael, V'Midbar, Ola Stomin Avoy. On the other hand, Rabbi Hillel, Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Yisag, really, all hold that it was an Oilas Tomid, that it wasn't an Oila, especially in honor of the fact that they're seeing that they're seeing the presence of the Shechina, but rather the regular Oilas Tomid that they had to bring twice a day. Tosfos points out that, in other words, Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Lozer or Rabbi Eliezer would say that Bes Shammai and Bes Hillel didn't disagree on that. Yeah, many times in the Gemara, where later Tanoim disagree whether Bes Shammai and Bes Hillel even argued about a particular point, they would say they did not, and therefore they would say, so it's not that they're holding like Bes Shammai. We know Bes Shammai, the Makom Bes Hillel ain't a Mishnah, but rather they're saying that there was never any machlokas about this, and everybody agrees with the opinion that you're attributing to Bes Shammai. Okay, so we have three different Tanoim on three different sides. So let's go through and show how that's the case. Bes Shammai Hodam Moron. Bes Shammai, we just explained that they said the Ola there was an Ola Sri'iya. Rabbi Shmuel, where do we see that Rabbi Shmuel said such a thing? Detanya, we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Shmuel, Maklolos Nemu B'Sinai. Now we have to consider, we know there's a lot of mitzvahs that are described, when Hashem gave the Torah, but then the details of many mitzvahs are only described later on in Chumash. So when were those details given? Rabbi Shmuel says only the general mitzvah was given at Sinai. Upratus nem upratus by Oyel Moed, and the details were given later on in Oyel Moed, a year later, almost a year later, when the Mishkan was set up. In other words, for example, Rashi says, let's say about Korbanos. At the end of Parashat Yisroel, right after Matan Torah, Hashem tells Moshe some basic dinim of Korbanos. Mizbach adoma tasa leiv is avachta olav as ola secha vat shomecha. But it doesn't give all the details over there. What do you do with the blood of the korban? You have the fact that you have to take the fact that you have to skin the korban, that you have to cut it up, or you have to cut up an ola a certain way. The fact that you have to offer the imurim, etc. None of that does it say over there. It only says that in Chumash Vayikra. So Rabbi Shmuel holds that to begin with, Hashem gave Moshe only the general mitzvah. You have to bring korbanos. And then later on, after the Mishkan was set up, then Hashem told him all the details. So in other words, those details did not apply before that. Rabbi Akiva says, no, klolos upratos nemu b'Sinai, both the generalities and the specifics were all said at Har Sinai, v'nishnu ba'oyo moyer, and then they were repeated in oyo moyer, v'nishtalshu ba'arvis moyer, and then they were repeated a third time in arvis moyer, when Moshe taught it to the Jewish people in Sefer Devarim. So even though it's not written earlier, Rabbi Akiva holds that as soon as Hashem gave Moshe the mitzvah of Korbanos, for example, he taught him all the details that are in Chumash Vayikra. Now, so therefore, so it has to be, the Gemara says, that Rabbi Shmuel must necessarily hold, like Bes Shammai, that this was an Ola Sri'iya. The Isak Udaydach Ola Sheikrivi Yisrael Bamidba Olas Tomid Havoi, if you were going to say that the Ola that they were bringing at that time on Hay Sivan is an Olas Tomid, like Bes Hillel holds, can't be, then it wouldn't work according to Rabbi Shmuel. Mi ikam midi de meikra le boi hefshit nituach, because how could you have that originally the korban tamid is brought without hefshit nituach? You don't have to strip off the skin, you don't have to cut it up a certain way, or you just offer it whole on the mizbeach, or the soif boi hefshit nituach, and later on after Hashem gives the mitzvahs in Chumash Vayikra, then it's going to change, and then from then on the procedure for the Oilas Tomid changes, and we do it with Hefshit Miniturach. Therefore, necessarily, it must be that it was that now Tosfos points out, in other words, the details about hefshet nitua, it says the gufe, it says by the ola itself, really actually it says it by an ola nedava. But nevertheless, at least the korban tamid, being a korban ola, and being an ola that's brought every day, then therefore we would assume the same rules apply to it. As opposed to the ola sri'iyah, fine, but it doesn't say anything about hefshet nitua in connection with the ola sri'iyah. So therefore, Beis Shammai and we're saying now, Rabbi Shmuel can say that in fact the Ola Sri'iyah at that time did not require Hefshet Neturah. Okay, so later on that changed and an Ola Sri'iyah, just like every other Ola, does require it. But that's not as big a deal to say that there's a change versus the Korban Tamid, where it mentions Hefshet Neturah more in connection with an Ola that's more similar to the Korban Tamid. The Meiri gives a different take on it. He says, in other words, the Ola Sri'iyah that we're talking about over here may not even been something that Hashem commanded them. It was something that they on their own decided, you know what, we're appearing in the front of the presence of Hashem. Hashem is showing his presence to us. Therefore, by rights, we have to go to the Korban. So therefore, the Gemara, so therefore, there's less of a problem to say that it didn't follow all the later rules of Korbanos as far as Hefshet Nituach. But to say that it was the Korban Tamid, that would be something that Hashem commanded them to do, then how could it be that in the middle, the procedure of it changes? So therefore, that must necessarily mean that Rabbi Shmuel holds, like Beis Shammai, that it wasn't an Olas Tamid, it was an Olas Re'iyah. And therefore, that's why Beis Shammai is saying there was an Olas Re'iyah. Then also, so therefore, your proof, Beis Hillel, that a Shlomim is greater because there was one before Matan Torah, Beis Shammai would say that would fall away. Okay, Rabbi Lazar, where do we see that Rabbi Lazar or Rabbi Yezer holds this way? The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, when the pasuk says Olas Tomid Ho Asuria b'Har Sinai, you have to bring the Olas Tomid as was done on Har Sinai. So Rabbi Lazar, I mean Maaseh Nemar b'Sinai, it means the procedure of how to bring the Olas Tomid was said at Har Sinai. V'hi atzma lo korva, but the actual korban Tomid was not brought at that time. Namely, the Olas that the Bechorim were bringing was, as we were saying, an Olas Re'iyah. Rabbi Akiva, Omer Rabbi Akiva says no, korva v'shuv lo paska. The korban Tomid was brought then. And from then on, it never stopped. They continued bringing continuously throughout all the years in the desert. Tosfos points out, when you get down to it, we're talking about a korban that was brought the day before Matan Torah. But nevertheless, we're saying that Maaseh, the instructions of how to give it, were given at Har Sinai. There's actually a sicha in Chelek Chof Ches where the Rebbe talks about that and explains that the vort is that since Matan Torah was going to be the next day and Shabbos and Yom Tov already have an effect on the day before them, you have Tosfos Mechol Al HaKodesh, for example. So therefore, the fact that Matan Torah was going to take place on the next day, that already had an effect on the Korban from the day before, that it's considered as if it was a Korban after the time of Matan Torah, and therefore that we can learn from it for the future. So therefore, so we can learn from the details that were given from that about that korban for the future. So Rabbi Lazar is saying the instructions of how to give the korban were given then, but the actual korban tamid was not brought then. Whereas Rabbi Akiva is saying they continued to bring it from then on. Elamani mekayim. So Rabbi Akiva continues. So what do I do with the pasuk that where the Navi is telling the Jewish people the important thing is not to bring korbanos, the important thing is to listen to what Hashem says. And he says as a proof, Hazvachim u'mincha yigashtim li b'midbar aboy v'shana beis Yisrael, did you Jewish people bring to me Zvachim and Mincha during the 40 years in the desert? In other words, apparently not. So the Navi is saying that they didn't. So how can Rabbi Akiva say that they continued bringing the Olas Tamid throughout all that time? He says, Shivte shall Levi shall Avda Avodah Zarah, Shevet Levi, who did not worship Avodah Zarah, as we have in this week's parasha, Heini Krivu Oisa, they are the ones who offered it. In other words, they brought it out of their own funds rather than all the Jewish people contributing to it. Says Rabbi Akiva. So therefore, we see that Rabbi Lazar or Rabbi Eliezer hold that the actual Olas Tamid was not brought on, at Har Sinai, it was brought only after Hashem gave the instructions, which is later on in Chumash Vayikra. Now let's go through the three Tanoim who say that they did bring an Olas Tamid there on the 5th of Sivan. Beis Hillel Hoda Amoran, we said Beis Hillel says that they consider the Ola there was an Olas Tamid, and therefore they say there was no Olas Re'iyah, however there was Chagiga. And therefore, they say Chagiga is stronger than Ola. By the way, how they're saying it was Chagiga, we have to remember, when Moshe first went to Paroi and told him, let the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, he tells them, Shalach Hasami, V'yachoygu li b'midbar. So it means they should make a chagiga for me in the desert. So when do we, what's the first time we find them bring a korban? Here. So therefore, this shlamim, where the first find them bring a korban shlamim, that is here. So therefore, this shlamim is the chagiga that they had told Pari that they're going to be bringing. And Vesilo saying only that. There was no oilas re'iyah because they say that it was an oilas tamid. Therefore, they say that we see that the shlamim is more important than the oilas re'iyah. Rabbi Akiva, we also just said, because we brought the discussion between him and Rabbi Lazar, where Rabbi Lazar had said that it was an Olas Ri'iyah, and Rabbi Akiva says when Olas Tomid, it was an Olas Tomid, and the Olas Tomid continued continuously from there. Rabbi Yosef Aglili, where do we see Rabbi Yosef Aglili addresses this Tanya? Rabbi Yosef Aglili, remember, Sholosh mitzvahs nitzavu Yisrael ba'aloisim l'regel. The Jewish people are commanded three mitzvahs when they go on a lila regel. Re'iyah v'chagigah v'simcha, to appear in the Bismikdash and bring an olas re'iyah, to bring a korban chagiga, and simcha, as we said, to eat the meat of a korban. And he says, each one of them, yesh b're'iyah she'in b'shtehen, the re'iyah has a feature that the other two do not have. V'yesh b'chagiga she'in b'shtehen, the chagiga has a feature that the other two don't have. Yesh b'simcha she'in b'shtehen, and simcha has a feature that the other two don't have. So let's go through them. Yesh b're'iyah she'in b'shtehen, what's the feature that re'iyah has that the other two don't? So re'iyah oyla kula l'gavaya, the oylas re'iyah goes completely burnt on the mizbeach to Hashem, mashenken b'shtehen, as opposed to the chagiga is a shlamim. The simcha is also involved eating the meat of a shlamim. So those two are eating my people as well. Yesh b'chagiga mashen b'shtehen. Where does the chagiga have a feature that the other two don't? Shechagiga yesh nalipnei adibur, because the chagiga existed even before Matan Torah. Mashen b'shtehen, which is not true of the other two. So we see therefore that he holds with Beis Hillel and with Reb Akiva that oila that they brought on Hay Sivan was not an oilas re'iyah, but rather an oilas tamid. And he continues yesh b'simcha mashen b'shtehen. And then you have a feature in simcha that you don't have the other two. Shas simcha neheges ba noshim of a noshim, because the mitzvah of simcha applies to both men and women. Mashen b'shtehen, as opposed to the re'iyah and the chagiga, only apply to men, as we said in the Mishnah. Because after all, there are mitzvahs that's a shas man grah. So we see that Rabbi Yosef Aglili holds like Beis Hillel and like Rabbi Akiva that it wasn't an oilas re'iyah. That there was no oilas re'iyah before Matan Torah. So the Gemara says, "But Rabbi Shmuel, my timer, chamokus chamokus like Beis Shammai." Now let's see. Among the group that we said that are on Beis Shammai's side, we said Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Lazar, and Rabbi Shmuel. Now Rabbi Lazar, fine. He said pretty clearly that v'hi atma le'korba. But as far as Rabbi Shmuel, why are we saying he goes like Beis Shammai? We would rather he goes like Beis Hillel, because by his time already the halacha had been established like Beis Hillel. So why are we saying that he goes like Beis Shammai? And he's saying, and we're saying the svara was because if we were going to think that oila that they brought on the day before Matan Torah was an oilas tamid, can't be. We said before me ikamidi me ikrul boy hefshet mituach. We said, how could it be that the same korban that the same korban previously didn't require hefshet mituach? Because according to Rabbi Shmuel, we said those details of hefshet mituach only came into operation when Hashem gave the mitzvah to Moshe at the beginning of Parashas Vayikra, which is only after the Mishkan was built. And well, soif bo hefshet mituach, and you're going to say later on it does require. So what kind of a logic is that? We just said that Rabbi Yosef Aglili says that the oila they brought was an oilas tamid, and meikra leboi hefshim neturach lasoif boi hefshim neturach, and we see that Rabbi Yosef Aglili in fact holds that there was that change, that previously it didn't require hefshim neturach and now it does. The Tanya, as we learn in a brisa, Rabbi Yosef Aglili oima oila sheikrivi yisrael b'midbar, that oila that they brought on hay sivan ena touna hefshim neturach, it didn't require hefshim neturach lepisha ain hefshim neturach elam oil ma'ir ba'ila. Because Hefshet Neturach only begins after Oyel Moed, after he holds like Rabbi Shmuel, that Hashem gave the details to Moshe first time in Oyel Moed, and up until that point, those details didn't apply. So Moshe said, you're right, Smimi Kan, Rabbi Shmuel, delete Rabbi Shmuel, so you have only two. You have Beis Shammai, and you have Rabbi Lazar, or Rabbi Eliezer is on their side. We can't necessarily show that Rabbi Shmuel necessarily holds like Beis Shammai, maybe he holds like Beis Hillel. We'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem.